From the University of Arkansas at Little Rock, KUAR Public Radio brings you Yesterday, Today, and Tomorrow, the only program on radio today dedicated to the preservation of comparative generational thought, with your host, Phil Marriage. Welcome to the Crossroads of History.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another 2013 edition of Yesterday, Today, and Tomorrow here at Little Rock. I'm Phil Marriage, your host. I'm really glad you guys can be with us here this afternoon. We're going to be talking about something that I think you'll be very interested in. I'll tell you a little bit more about that in just a second, but I do want to remind you that if you'd like to listen to the longer version of the program, we've kind of changed things up a little bit here at KUAR. Recently, we have taken all of our podcasts and all of our programs and gone on to the NPR format. So all of our information is now at KUAR.org, and then you click on the Programs button. You'll have to go to the last page, click on Yesterday, Today, and Tomorrow. You'll be able to listen to the longer program topics right there. I want to give you an opportunity to think about where we are with this topic before I tell you what we're doing. If you've ever listened to music videos, if you've ever gone to the theater, if you've ever watched movies that have music in them, have dance in them, you're going to see all kinds of different things that are involved with dance. And we've even done a program or two over the years on dance in related areas. But there's a basis behind that that has gone on for generations and generations. We've never talked about this topic, but today we're going to be talking about ballet. It's probably one of the most important art forms for dance and historically important parts for our culture when you talk about dance, and that's what we want to talk about today. My guests with me are all in the studio, which is a rarity, but it's great to have everybody here. Speaking from the older generation is Jennifer Maddox. Jennifer is currently an artist in residence at Henderson State University, where she's the dance program director, instructor, and the Henderson State University dance company director and choreographer. She's also an instructor of dance at Ouachita Baptist University and the Arkansas Art Center Summer Theater Academy. Jennifer, glad to have you with us here today.
Oh, glad to be able to come.
And then speaking from the middle generation perspective is Marla Edwards. Marla is with Ballet Arkansas. She's the ballet mistress in her second season with the company, and she's originally from San Antonio, Texas. She got her start in dancing there at the Houston Ballet Academy and performed in many of the Houston Ballet productions. She danced as a soloist for Ballet Arkansas, and after retirement from the stage, which you can't really believe if you saw her, she doesn't look retirement age at all, she earned her BA in history from UALR and has taught at several local dance studios. And Marla is married to Chad Edwards, and together they have three children. Marla, glad to have you here too.
Great to be here. Thank you.
And then speaking from the younger generation is Toby Llewellyn. He's with the Ballet Arkansas Company, member in his third season with the company, and he's originally from Peoria, Illinois, and graduated from Butler University, where he performed various lead roles in the department's production, and he also teaches dance at Shuffles and Ballet 2 in Little Rock. Toby, glad to have you here too.
Glad to be here, Phil.
Okay, that's my guest for this evening's program, and right now I'm in deep water because this is a topic that, like many of you, if you're listening to the program today, you may not know a lot about ballet, but you may have done what I've done over the years, and that's taken your kids to the Nutcracker in the wintertime. It seems to be a tradition across the country. I've enjoyed it there. I've also enjoyed watching the various aspects of ballet that fits into the movies and things that I've watched. We have a stigma, I think, that I have had over my years in hearing all the time that ballet is maybe something that's beyond most of us because it's a very tough thing to do. So I want to start with you, Jennifer Maddox. What is it about ballet that has held this kind of an aloofness, if you want to use that word, over the other dance forms of modern dance, but still is probably the most important to our culture and also historically?
The term ballare is from Italian origin, and it means to dance. It is the oldest art form, going back into thousands of years. So this is something that we as humans have been doing for generations. We haven't called it ballet. Ballet is something that became part of the elite during the King Louis time, which is when we think of the birth of ballet, and that's when those who had the power, the money, they made themselves dancers. They had these elaborate parties, and those became the ballet. So I think that's where it became the division of, I'm not sure I'm able to do this from the lay person's perspective. That's just my historical perspective on it. Also, when we take something into a proscenium theater, you have the doer, the dancer, and you have the audience. So there is that separation. That in itself, those that sit and watch, the audience, and those who do perform. that's another reason why there's been that division of, am I able to do this? It takes about 10 to 15 years to technically train a dancer. And for those of us who have other things in our lives, that's a big chunk of our life. In the ballet world, if you are in your 20s, they think you're in your prime. Well, I'm in my 50s and I'm still moving. Maybe not doing, you know, triple pirouettes on point, but I am still moving and I will continue to move until I'm not alive.
It seems to me that a lot of people want their children to learn ballet as the starting point, and then they go maybe off into other things. Marla Edwards, talk to me about your perspective on the training of a young person. The parents that come in and they bring their child, are they anticipating that their child is actually going to go into ballet, or are they thinking this is just a good starting point?
In most cases, I think they just think it's physical activity for their child to have after school. That's how I started. My dad said, hey, I saw a dance studio up the street. We should, you know, enroll her for something to do. My brother had baseball. I had ballet. I don't think they had a clue as to what they had started when I was 5 years old, and the amount of time and money not only I put into it, but that my parents did as well. Certainly. I'm driving me back and forth, paying tuition, shoes, all of that.
Now, you mentioned your brother got baseball and you got ballet. Did he ever desire to do, or was he ever given the opportunity to do ballet?
I can't say that the opportunity was necessarily presented to him, but my dad was a college baseball coach, and I think baseball was just sort of in the bloodline there for him. I was sort of the exception, but I was the girl, so it fell into place fine.
Let me jump over to Toby Llewellyn, the younger generation. Toby, of course, you're the male in our group here. What's your perspective on the younger guys getting involved? I mean, at age five, you were?
Yes.
Do you see young boys at that age, or when do they?
At Shuffles, we actually have, I teach a boys class, and I have six boys under the age of eight, all starting dance, and it's great to see them. A lot of them just do it as recreation. Some of them do it because their sister's there. That's how I started. My sister was at the studio, and then they needed a boy for Nutcracker. It all begins with Nutcracker, usually, because it's fun to perform, and then you get hooked.
One of the things about ballet that I thought about as I was thinking about this topic, and I remember a number of years ago, it was probably in the third year that we did the program, I did a program on opera. Of course, opera tells a story through song, and my thoughts have been over this topic that ballet tells a story through dance. Let's use the Nutcracker as an example, because probably many of the people listening may not have seen other ballet performances, but a lot of us have seen the Nutcracker, even on TV, and you know the story by the dance. Toby, tell me about the story as you see it from a young person's perspective.
Well, I think it's a story that it's very easy for the general public to follow. I mean, it's Christmas, obviously. We tell the story through very much pantomime. A lot of it in the first act of the whole ballet is pretty much setting the base of the story, and then from there it goes on to the different divertissements.
How old were you when you did Nutcracker the first time?
First time I was 10.
Marla, tell me about your perspective as you've aged and gone in a little further about the art of ballet and what you're trying to do as you're performing in the story form, I guess.
It's not always necessarily that there is a concrete story behind what the dancer is portraying, as the Nutcracker does, but sometimes the dancer is telling the story of the music. Being an outsider, looking in now as someone who is directing rehearsals instead of being in it, definitely you see the broader picture. When you're dancing, you're sort of concentrated on you and what your role is, and I don't know that you always realize what that role's relationship is to the other people around you, just because you have to be so focused on what you're doing. But once you get to step outside of that, it's actually really nice to watch the show in its entirety and to see how those different characters interact with one another. And you get a better perspective on how to teach someone else to start to understand their relationship with another person. Even if it's just a snowflake versus a snowflake, there still has to be some kind of relationship happening there.
Access to ballet, how has that changed over the generation? How has the public been able to have access to ballet?
From my memory, as in the 60s, I saw a production of Swan Lake danced by Rudolf Nureyev and Margot Fonteyn. And that's when I knew that that's what I wanted to do for the rest of my life. Now, I was lucky. Most people didn't have that opportunity.
Did you see it live?
I did.
You did?
I did. Hmm. I was 8. You have movies. You have computer, my students look at things on YouTube. So there is that. It's not just books and passing down generation from, and these are, you know, these are very old ballets. The Nutcracker is very old, and it's something that till the last however long video was passed down from generation to generation to generation. So, and it has changed.
So the only way you got to see it was to actually go there.
To see it live.
Well, let me jump back over to Toby Llewellyn, the younger generation. Access to ballet is the same question, really. When you got interested in it at your young age, did it come from going to them, or did you see something in movies or video or anything
it
like
was
that?
Mostly, well, I kind of come from a dancing family. My mom was a dancer, like grew up just going to shows, and one time they just, like, Nutcracker was this, like I said, was the start. But I think it's grown even more in college. Like, YouTube is a dancer's best friend sometimes, because we can constantly watch some of the best do their work, and by watching you can learn. So YouTube has made it very accessible to another generation, and it's accessible at any time, anywhere. So I think a lot of these kids now are starting to watch more and more video that when I was younger, we just had to hear our teachers tell us about how good Baryshnikov was. You couldn't just watch it on a Tuesday afternoon. But now you can just go online right away and watch and learn.
Well, now you mentioned Nureyev and Baryshnikov. There's a few other names, I guess, that come from the past that maybe we have forgotten. Marlon, tell me some about some of the people that are important to ballet that gave us where we are now.
Well, if you want to go back to the beginning of point work for women, it was Marie Taglioni, whose father actually made special shoes for her to enhance her look of being non-human, to look more like a fairy or something ethereal, so that she was floating across the stage.
That's where point started?
Yes.
When did that happen?
Taglioni, early 1800s.
Yeah, something to that. It wasn't accessible to women at first either.
That's
ballet
right.
Began with men only. And now it's about the woman, really. Mm-hmm. The man is there to showcase the woman for the most part. And then moving ahead for pioneers in choreography, I mean, of course, the name that comes to mind is George Balanchine, mm-hmm. who really revolutionized the non-story ballet and just ballet for what your body presents as a dancer to your audience.
I must admit that leading up to the program, I read Susan Farrell's book about Balanchine, and it was very, very interesting and insightful as to what a person goes through involved with that. How important was Balanchine really to ballet?
Well, I don't know that there's a right or a wrong, but he had something new, I think, is really, and he was great. I was not trained in his style. My body didn't do his style very well. It's really sort of geared for a certain body type, but I have a great appreciation for it and for what it sort of opened the door for. To me, he was sort of the Elvis Presley of dance. You know, Elvis brought rock and roll, and Balanchine brought modern ballet to its audiences.
Mm-hmm. Well, Toby, does Balanchine mean something to people who are young?
For a lot of us younger dancers, Balanchine was like the father of American ballet. Before Balanchine, we had the Ballet Russe that would come in, but until Balanchine was here, it was the first time that a product of like a production actually was put on the stage that was made in America, produced in America, and put on American stages for the American public. So Balanchine really was the first one that wasn't coming in from Europe to do a work. He started with New York City Ballet, and from there, he just hit the ground running, and his works are now everywhere.
Well, Jennifer Maddox, your perspective about Balanchine and Susan Farrell and these other names we're talking about, how important have these individuals been to ballet? And really, is Balanchine's work still the way things go?
Balanchine, to me, growing up, was the ultimate. I can remember as a teenager studying summer in New York, and some of the dancers from the New York City Ballet, who at that time were his dancers, the Balanchine babies they were called, would be teaching these classes. And as far as Balanchine being important to this country, he was the American ballet. He brought it to a respectable place. Before him, it was the Ballet Russe that would come through. Other than that, if you were a dancer in the United States, you were not respected well. In other words, they were in the clubs and possibly not, earning money in other ways. So they were not the elite. Balanchine did bring respect to the American dancer.
But apparently, he didn't have a lot of tolerance for people who didn't fit the mold.
That's ballet all the way around, whether Balanchine or not.
From the beginning, definitely.
There is a mold that you must fit, and unfortunately, to become a professional dancer, if you don't fit into a certain mold, by the time you're ready to become professional, which is your late teens usually, early 20s, there's certain body shape, the shape of your feet, your thinness, and depending on what company you're trying to become a part of, height plays a part in roles that you get. The shape of your feet plays a part. I was just in a casting meeting today for the Nutcracker, and those are all things that I had to consider before putting the name next to the role. And it's unfortunate, but I think it's, again, part of that elitism, but it is also what keeps ballet special.
Well, it doesn't sound to me like it's much different than pro football.
No, very much the same. Very much the same. You can't have, you know, 120-pound linebacker. It just doesn't work. And you can't have 150-pound ballerina. That doesn't work either.
Well, Toby, tell me about the form that a male has to have to be in ballet these days.
I mean, pointed feet. There used to be back in the day that men did not have to have high as an extension. They didn't have to get their legs as up. Their feet didn't have to point, but that's really changing nowadays. Legs must be straight. You have to get your leg to at least 90 or higher, no matter what. Jumping, you have to be able to leap across the stage, no problem. Lifting, partnering's a big thing, especially for a male dancer. You have to be able to lift any girl that's put in front of you. I mean, you'll get anywhere from 130 to 100, anywhere in between there, on an average. I mean,
does it get much over 130?
No, you know, 130 is probably the extreme, and that might be a very tall and maybe muscular girl, but I would think the average dancer's weight would be somewhere around the 100, 110 range.
And that's been the way you've always seen it from your perspective?
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it really, since probably Balanchine's era, that thin, lithe body needs to be a part of it. I have mixed emotions about it. I think that it sort of breeds insecurity in the dancers, and you really want your dancers to be confident and secure. However, if there is extra weight, it's harder for partnering. It's also, movement can be inhibited if there's too much weight on the limbs. It just, it's a catch-22, really.
Well, Jennifer Maddox, has that been the same for you through your experience with ballet?
Definitely. When you think of something being aesthetically pleasing, you want the lines, especially in ballet, to be long. Balanchine did change those lines and made them thinner and longer. If you think about the ballet dancer from Europe, they were a little rounder and shorter. And from Balanchine's time through today for ballet, they're very long and lean.
In my day, I was not the thinnest. I wasn't heavy, but I wasn't the thinnest. And I would have partners say, I would rather have a girl that weighs 115 pounds but can jump and can hold herself than the 95-pound girl who maybe didn't eat today and can't hold herself up. That's a much heavier weight than someone who might on the scale weigh more but knows how to be a good partner, because the female has to be a good partner as well.
Mm-hmm. Well, keeping in the area of the form of the dancer, I thought of one of the stigmas that I read even in the book there had to do with drugs. And to control your weight or control your body when it's so important, let me give that to you, Jennifer Maddox. Is it important, or has it been important over the generations, and has it been different to approach the idea of drugs and whatever else diet stuff you have to do?
Well, I think nutrition is key. When you think about the body and the muscle and being able to have lean muscle, the dancer has to eat throughout the day in order to keep that energy and in order to keep the muscle. I can remember in, you know, going back generation or two, I can remember in the 60s where the dancer would go out for a cigarette. You don't see that today. That's something that is a nice change in my head.
No more cigarettes
and
Diet Coke.
No more cigarettes and Diet Coke. I do see dancers eating low-fat yogurt and fruit and vegetables. So there is that education as far as how to keep the body going. Maybe beyond 22, wouldn't that be nice? You know, I'm in my 50s and I'm still dancing. And part of that is because of the way I've treated my body through the last. And that's one thing about dance. It's not just anaerobic. It's not just aerobic. It's both.
Well, Marla, is drugs something you saw abused at all?
Oh, yes. I saw many different things. Drug abuse, as far as crystal meth, was just sort of coming onto the scene, and I knew a couple of dancers who did it because they heard it gives you energy and keeps you skinny. Smoking was definitely lots of smokers. Laxatives as a part of anorexia. Yes, knew several that did that. And then there were the new prescription diet drugs that if you went to the right doctor, I had a roommate who was on Fen-Phen and ended up in a car accident, right, because she passed out. There was trading going on. I have to admit that I had a friend who had diet pills, a prescription from her doctor, and she gave me some because I thought I was too heavy at 110 pounds and, you know, it made my pupils dilate. And someone said, that's not right. And I finally realized, okay, maybe that's not the best way to go. But it kept me energized and not eating, which if you don't have the anorexic tendency and you're trying to lose weight when you're already underweight, where do you go? What do you do?
Really, when it comes to ballet, our generation is kind of the generation where the heavy drug use is going out. I mean, Balanchine really created this style of ballet where stuff is very physical and very demanding. And if you're doing these drugs and like smoking, you can't get through a show. Like, especially with us being a small company, there's 11 of us. Our last show, we were in 4 of 6 pieces. Like, you're constantly on stage. So if you, I mean, you have to actually take care of your body and you have to be ready to work. So I think nowadays with the more demand of the athleticness, choreographers can get way more experimental. They can go way more over the top and expect way harder stuff out of you than just classical ballet.
Jennifer, when you look at the younger generation now and compare it to your younger generation from what Toby's talking about, do you see them in better shape than where you guys were at that time?
Oh, most definitely. They have to be in order to be performing professionally now. They have to be. And I see their career not ending at age 22. I see them dancing in their 30s professionally still as well because of this.
How has injury affected ballet? How has it changed over time?
Well, injuries are something that we in the dance profession just have a huge fear about, both as a choreographer, director, as well as performer. I think with the advent of better medicine, if there is an injury, there is a quicker healing time. Physical therapists have been my best friends.
Did you have much injury yourself?
I did, and part of that is the fact of ballet, because of its turnout. If turnout is not done correctly all the time, the knee can become injured, like you see in football, for instance. You know, the leg, one part of the leg goes one. Well, that can happen over time for the ballet dancer, and I have had knee surgeries. Though I think through my injuries, I have become a better teacher. I do think that I'm smarter now and within my own body, and I can pass that on to the younger student, where I see them trying to turn their feet out more than their hips can allow at that point, and I say, no, you're gonna blow your knee out. And they actually listen, whereas when I was 10, nobody told me that.
Well, Marla, what about injury for people in your age category?
Yeah, it was common. I had 3 orthopedic surgeries over my career. I think the more athletic our dancers become, the more we're pushing our bodies for the legs to be higher, the jumps to be higher, the feet to be pointed more, and we're pushing and pushing, and your body is going to rebel at some point.
Well, Toby, what about injury for a young person?
Injuries for us, it's very difficult. I tore my meniscus my sophomore year at Butler, which was pretty devastating, actually. It was really hard to come back from.
I lost out on a job with a company because I was having surgery the day after the audition. He wanted a few of us to stay and take class for a few more days to make the final decision. And it was take this and possibly my career be over and maybe get the job or have the surgery, continue my career, but not with that company. And that's what I chose to do.
Well, you said the magic word there for me, Marla, that I want to take the conversation into, and that is career. As a career, how's that changed over time?
Well, it's changed considerably. Several decades ago, there was not as much opportunity for, especially those in our state, to pursue not just performance, but there are other career choices within dance and ballet.
Marla, what about a career from your perspective?
Definitely it's changed in what I like to think of as less than a generation between Toby and myself. In my time, if you weren't dancing with a professional company by 18, you pretty much, well, forget it. So you forewent your college education and you went right into the dance world. And today I would say probably 75% of Ballet Arkansas have college degrees already. But in my day, if you went to college, it was a death sentence for a performing career. If you went to college for a dance degree, you could get your master's and teach in college or work at a studio or something like that. But as far as a performing professional, that wasn't an option.
Toby, career.
I mean, I was one of the few that went to college, but it's becoming way more normal now to go to college and then go into the dance field as a dancer and a performer. A lot of companies now, even out of high school, they expect you to do 2 years in their trainee program because it actually gets you ready.
Career from a financial standpoint, is that sort of like public radio?
Absolutely. dancers, well, if you're with a large company, they're unionized. Most of the large 40-plus member companies are unionized, and so they get paid a living wage. But our poor dancers at Ballet Arkansas, they have to supplement with something else. They all have second jobs. Most of the time they teach ballet at local studios, and that helps a lot. And even myself as a ballet mistress, my salary is nothing too exciting, but, you know, we do it because we love it, and it's art, and there aren't many artists that really make a lot of money. Mm-hmm. You know, it's the very, very few.
I want to give you guys time to tell us a little bit about what's coming up for Ballet Arkansas.
Ballet Arkansas is our state's only professional ballet company, and we have 11 professional dancers. We are going to have two productions, full productions this year, the Nutcracker, of course, at Robinson Center Music Hall, and then we have our annual spring performance, which is called Momentum this year, and that is at the Arkansas Repertory Theater, and we're proud to be there as well. And then throughout the year, we do all kinds of outreach programming. We tour to smaller communities throughout the state. We do master classes. We do children's performances just to sort of spread the word about dance as an art form to the corners of the state that, you know, are not going to have the opportunity to drive to Little Rock to see the Nutcracker or to see Momentum. So we're proud of that mission that we have as a nonprofit, and that really we're trying to reach every part of our state with this art form that we think only enhances society.
Tell us about the website.
Yes, balletarkansas.org. You'll see a list of our company members with their photographs and biographies. You'll see our upcoming event.
Jennifer Maddox, let me let you have the last word on ballet. How important is ballet to Arkansas?
Oh, my. The arts in general are so important to our culture. Dance is one of, as I said before, one of the earliest of the arts, and it is something that can enhance not only the doer but also the observer. I think the arts are so important. I believe them in them so much that I teach it to liberal arts universities.
Well, folks, I know many of you, as I mentioned before, have kids that are involved, interested in dance. Take advantage of these opportunities to get them out to see something that broadens their experience in dance. It's got to be a good thing. We've been talking about ballet today here on Yesterday, Today, and Tomorrow. I must admit, coming into this program, and those of you who listen to the program over the years, you know I don't know much at all about ballet, but I really had a good time talking with you guys about this. That last voice you heard was Jennifer Maddox. She's currently an artist in residence at Henderson State University, where she is the dance program director and instructor, and at Henderson State University, the dance company director and choreographer. Jennifer, so glad to have had you with us here today.
Thank you so much.
And then our middle generation guest has been Marla Edwards. She's with Ballet Arkansas in her second season there with the company, originally from San Antonio. How long have you been in Arkansas?
16 years.
16 years. Well, you know, that's
I'm almost, and I married in Arkansas.
Yeah,
so.
Okay. And very involved in Ballet Arkansas.
Yes.
Glad to have you here. And then speaking from the younger generation has been Toby Llewellyn, who's in his third year there with Ballet Arkansas. And Toby, glad to have you here, and wish you the best in your career.
Thank you very much.
Since you're the young guy. Folks, if you've enjoyed our program today and you'd like to listen to the longer version, go to kuar.org. Click on Programs. You'll find us at the very last page under Yesterday, Today, and Tomorrow. We'll have the longer version there. Join us next week. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you then. Yesterday, Today, and Tomorrow is a production of KUAR Public Radio, Little Rock.